This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, August 24th of 2022. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Jewish Community Center in Denver is kicking off a film festival today that highlights the experiences of people living with disabilities. We'll hear some poetry readings from the annual Telluride Mushroom Festival, which recently descended on the San Juan Mountains. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's the Hightower Lowdown. On today's A Public Affair, we'll have our quarterly conflict resolution show. The topic this morning is adult conflict in youth sports and the conflicts between parents, coaches, and referees. Then at 9:30, Indra Raj will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Christian Garabay.
Douglas County School Board voted to add a property tax to November's ballot Tuesday. The tax would fund teachers' salaries, new schools, and better security. The decision comes after a consistent decline of educational assistance in the district. The Douglas County School District agreed on two measures to add to the ballot. These two measures would add a $60 million mill levy override that would help with the funds to provide these services to the schools in the area. The second measure is a $450 million bond that school board members added to the ballot to help build schools and upgrade school security. According to 9 News, several board members also said they've heard from families who worry some of the $60 million will be used for something other than teacher pay, such as arming teachers or school vouchers. 9 News adds, multiple times school officials said they have no intentions of doing that. They are not allowed to allocate the money to anything other than district-wide compensation to retain staff. If residents decide to approve the override, teachers in the district could see a 9% increase in their salary and positive changes to their schools for the upcoming school year. The city of Fort Collins will start spraying mosquitoes on the northeast side of town starting Thursday, August 25th and Sunday, August 28th, from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m., with the help of their contractor, Vector Disease Control International. The decision comes after reports of an increased presence of West Nile virus-infected Culex mosquitoes. The spraying will happen in areas near College Avenue, Country Club Road, Turnberry Road, Timberline Road, Mulberry Street, I-25, and Drake Road. The city advises that residents in these areas make sure all pets are inside, all gardens be covered by a tarp, and that all doors and windows are closed for 30 minutes to an hour after the spraying is completed. A Boulder teen and his mother spent the summer hiking Colorado's 14ers to raise money for a rare syndrome. KGNU's Kiara Damari reports.
Multicentric carpal tarsal osteolysis syndrome, or MCTO, is a rare condition that can cause chronic kidney failure and progressive loss of bones in hands and feet. Owen Werner and his mom, Lisa Getches, decided to raise money to support medical research into MCTO through a nonprofit called Sophie's Neighborhood. Named after a 5-year-old Sophie Furterberg, who was diagnosed at 18 months after undergoing thousands of dollars of testing. Getches told the Daily Camera less than 50 people worldwide have been diagnosed with MCTO. So far, Werner and his mom have raised over $8,000. Sophie's parents, Lauren Furter Rosenberg and Hoyza Rosenberg, started Sophie's Neighborhood to help further MCTO research 5 years ago. The Rosenbergs own Boulder restaurants Black Belly and Santo. Rosenberg told the Daily Camera she hopes that the Precision Medicine Answers for Kids Today Act gets passed, which allows for more funding and research into rare diseases in children. For KGNU, I'm Kiara Damari.
Severe weather, flight delays, and staffing shortages are causing traffic jams and stranding passengers at airports across the country, including at Denver International Airport. Passengers have had to sleep on cots at the airport or shell out hefty sums to snag seats on different carriers. The Department of Transportation and other government agencies are considering measures to prevent future delays or out-of-pocket expenses for consumers. Demand for air travel has largely rebounded to pre-pandemic levels, though staffing at multiple levels, from bagging handlers to air traffic controllers, has not. The Boulder Police Department is seeking information to identify a man that robbed a bank Tuesday afternoon. The incident occurred just before 1:30 p.m. yesterday at the Vectra Bank at 2696 Broadway. The surveillance footage shows a heavyset white male wearing a long-sleeved shirt, shorts, and a black fisherman's hat. Police say the man presented a note demanding money but did not display a weapon. He reportedly left the scene on foot. The incident led to a lockout at nearby Casey Middle School.
According to the Colorado Sun, Lauren Boebert, the outspoken conservative Republican candidate from Garfield, Colorado, has revealed that she did not report significant cryptocurrency and other stock investments from 2021. Boebert is running for the re-election to Colorado's 3rd District. The U.S. House of Representatives requires purchases, sales, or trades to be reported within 45 days under the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act of 2012. The report revealed that Boebert and her husband didn't file 8 crypto transactions on the Robinhood app that ranged from $4,000 to $60,000. Boebert is a pro-gun conservative and outspoken election denier. Her husband's gun-themed restaurant, Shooter's Grill, recently shut down in Rifle, Colorado. Boebert and her husband claimed the decision was not politically motivated, but purely a business decision. In a statement attributed to Boebert and her husband, Jason, Shooter's brand isn't going anywhere. There are exciting things in the works. This is not the first time Boebert has gotten in trouble for not disclosing stock and crypto assets. According to the Colorado Sun, in 2020, she failed to report that an oil and gas company, Western Slope, paid her husband nearly $1 million over 2 years in consulting fees. The forecast in the Denver-Boulder area is sunny with a slight chance of thunderstorms. The high today is 88 degrees and the low is 61 degrees. The National Weather Service expects scattered thunderstorms in the mountains this afternoon, mainly over the Front Range. There's a low threat of burn area flash flooding. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. The Jewish Community Center and Mizell Arts and Culture Center in Denver are kicking off a festival this evening, spotlighting the lives of people living with visible and invisible disabilities. The Denver edition of the Real Abilities Film Festival will take place in person from August 24th to August 27th, and virtually from August 24th to August 31st. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Denver Festival Coordinator Jenna Gregg to get the details.
This is the second time the Denver Jewish Community Center has participated in the Real Abilities Film Festival, but it is part of a nationwide effort. What's the history of this festival and what is its reach?
The history of the Real Abilities Film Festival is that it started in New York probably about 10 to 12 years ago, and they wanted to create space for people with disabilities, for advocates for people with disabilities, to come and watch films by, about, and for people within the community. From the first festival 10 to 12 years ago, they have expanded across the country and across the globe. They now have film festivals in Toronto and Mexico, as well as many major cities across the U.S. And here in Denver, we're just very excited that our facility was chosen as a host site.
Nationally, it seems like Jewish community centers play a big role in these screening events. What's the connection with the Jewish community?
Yeah, so the Jewish community feels that the Real Abilities Film Festival really embodies Jewish values. Here at the JCC Denver, we list our values, and a few of them that really resonate with both us and this festival are kehila, or community, or hakala, inclusion. Real Abilities is all about building community for people across the disability spectrum, and for advocates themselves, and for creating that inclusion aspect for anyone to walk through the door to feel welcome in our space.
You have a diverse range of films with different themes, like deaf, culture, and living with Parkinson's. What can viewers expect from the selection of films?
So viewers can expect to see a little bit for everyone. We've included films that, as you've noted, include Parkinson's, people living in the deaf community. There's a film about social workers working in the autism community. There's a film about advocacy in our own political system. It's a documentary about a man living with ALS and his journey through advocacy in healthcare. So it's a broad spectrum. We pick films from the Real Abilities catalog themselves. So they distill the films and find the best quality films that provide the best representation for each of these disabilities, including people in the community in the film selection process. So it is as most authentic of representation as we can make it.
What would you like the general public to know about this particular film festival?
So I would like the public to know that we are not just showing films. We are including workshops and Q&As with folks who either work in the disability community or live with disabilities themselves. We have a workshop all about employment and disability and being inclusive in the hiring process, thanks to our partners at Jewish Family Service of Colorado. And we've worked with local theater company, Family Theater Company, a disability affirmative theater company in Denver, and promoting a documentary that's all about their journey through creating a show. And then we're going to have some of their performers on stage with us to talk about their experience. So it's more than just watching films. We've got ways to engage and spark conversation.
Some disabilities are visible and evident, but what are some examples of invisible disabilities, and are there any films that feature them?
I think most of the films that we are showing this year are about visible disabilities. The film with Family Theater Company, titled Imperfect, shows their cast, which their cast of the show Chicago had multiple people with both visible and invisible disabilities. I believe one of the performers in that show had MS at a lower form. So looking at him, you would have no idea that he had that disability. They've had performers with injuries that are not present but do affect daily lives. Someone who is born with only one lung but can still sing a wonderful aria ballad in the show. So those are just some small examples of invisible disabilities. Another huge one, which we focused on a little bit more last year, is mental health. And that can affect an individual's daily life more than you realize. You don't know what they're dealing with inside. And there is a broad spectrum of mental health as well that can affect folks on a daily basis.
Where can people find more information about this film festival and the screenings in Denver?
The best place to find more information about this festival is at our website. That is jccdenver.org/real, spelled R-E-E-L. And on that page has all of the information about our festival. It'll link you off to a page where you can purchase tickets. If you are not interested in using technology, you can also give us a call at our box office, and that is 303-316-6360. This festival, we're trying to make it as accessible as possible in regards to financial accessibility as well. So tickets are offered at three tiers. You can self-select which tier works best for you, and that is offered across all in-person and virtual screenings.
Thank you so much. I have been speaking with Gina Gregg, Assistant General Manager at the JCC Missile Arts and Culture Center in Denver. She's also the organizer of the Real Abilities Film Festival that opens today and runs through the weekend. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
Telluride Mushroom Festival recently descended on the San Juan Mountains. In addition to presentations on the latest in mycology, The festival also celebrates the artistic side of the fungal world. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KOTO's Matt Hoisch spoke with some of the local artists behind one such event, the Michaelicious, Michaelicious, Michaelogical Poetry Show.
Why write and listen to poetry about mushrooms? Rosemary Watola Tromer's answer is another question.
Why not? I guess that's the real answer. Why wouldn't we want to listen to poems about mushrooms?
Watola Tromer is a local poet in the Telluride region and one of several writers reading work at the Telluride Mushroom Festival's annual poetry show.
Nobody really understands them, so there's lots of mystery there. They're pretty good for metaphors.
It can be very poignant. It can be very funny.
Diva Chisonis is also presenting work at the show. She estimates she started writing mushroom poetry about 7 years ago.
It's a huge dance, and when the mushrooms decide it's time, it's time. It's not up to us. So that's why we go out. That's why it's called mushroom hunting, because you hunt and you might not get.
Mushrooms are phonic. They grow underground.
The fruiting body of a mushroom, which is what we see when we're talking about mushroom hunting, is related to a massive underground, microscopic, often mycelial network that we don't see.
Art Goodtimes and Joanna Spindler are two other local poets presenting work.
And it's very fleeting. It comes up for a very brief amount of time, and then it deliquesces back into the ground.
Mycelia is the underground network of hyphae, little tiny thread-like roots that are all through the soil. In fact, they say in some soils, you can, in 1 square inch of soil, you can find 6 miles of hyphae.
When you walk over a hill and you see a spot, and you're like, there, the chanterelles will be there. And you walk over to this meadow, and sure enough, you know, this giant orange cart.
Every year is so different. Every season is so different. Every zone is so different. You can go back to the spot that's been good for you for 10 years, and then for 3 years, it's not, you know, and you start questioning, is it me? You know, or will you be here for me next year? Or what do I need to do for you? Do I need to do something better for the planet to have the karma, you know, come back at me?
Good Times is the poet in residence of the Telluride Mushroom Festival, as well as the poetry editor of Fungi Magazine. Much of the festival focuses on the culinary, medicinal, and ecological elements of mushrooms. But Good Times also stresses the importance of art to, in his words, temper the sciences. The arts, he says, humanize us and make us more understanding of the surrounding world.
That's the wonder of the arts. They really make us ask questions that we don't do sometimes when we're simply doing fact gathering or observation or recording.
Anytime that we're involving sciences, there's almost always a way for the arts to also enter into that conversation and open it up in a way that's playful, in a way that is heartfelt, and to bring playfulness and heart to any conversation, I think, helps bring it purpose.
As poets, I think it's our job a little bit to record a zeitgeist. It's only really been in the last, in my mind, like 5-10 years that the scientific community, the ecological community, the medical community, psychological community has come around to being like, oh yeah, mushrooms are the answer for mycoremediation. Mushrooms are good for dealing with PTSD. Mushrooms can help with cancer.
Of course, I couldn't chat with this collection of mycological bards without asking them to read a sample of mushroom poems from years past.
Just as you give up, there, through the trees, you see a clearing.
Yo ando siempre cantando. Make me a god of flowers and shrooms.
Basket, a knife, a nose primed for fungi. Packed for the hunt, I'm off.
It is a privilege to wander through the forest, to palaver with the Ponderosa chorus.
Some can pretend anything except what's true. Although most of us can smell truth.
This deciduous douche, this saprobic scrubbing.
Walk to the clearing, and there, in the moss, hundreds of chanterelles.
What love suddenly may be rot taking root.
Giving gratitude for all that grows around me. Mycelium and ungulates abound.
Make me one. Quiero andar siempre con
by wet wisdom, things click
the
into
hope
place.
Sticks to you like
oh, existing in the mystery of all of this. Illumination.
Yeah. This entangled
we are all fruiting bodies evolving in silence.
Anywhere you
tender
can
no
them.
For the pick.
By
no
noon,
gates. No
nearly
limits.
Everything.
Just space.
Possible.
No fences. No gates. No limits. Just space.
The bits of poetry read for this piece were excerpts from Rosemary Watola Tromer's poem, Mushroom Hunting in the Morning, Art Goodtime's poem, Siempre Cantando Flowers and Shrooms, Diva Chisonis' poem, Medicine Woods, and Joanna Spindler's poem, Boundless. Original music in this piece by Travis Fisher. For KOTO and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Matt Hoisch.
This story from KOTO comes to us via Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a network of public media stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including KGNU. Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. I want to talk a little bit today about the benefits of bulk herbs. So we've gotten very accustomed to using herbs in tea bags, and of course this makes it very convenient, but when herbs are ground up into the fine powder that they need to be in order to go through a flow machine, a lot of the essential oils will evaporate. So I love that we have a store like Rebecca's Apothecary in Boulder, where they sell bulk herbs in what's called a cut and sifted form. So they are cut up very conveniently, but not powder, because the more you powder something, the more the essential oils will evaporate. So very often, when we buy herbs in bulk, we get them in a plastic bag or a paper bag. And of course, paper is more environmental, but paper and plastic don't really protect the delicate essential oils that are in the plants. So once you get your herbs home, it's good to store them in a glass jar. I love to recycle things like vitamin bottles, which are often amber in color, because that best protects our herbs from light and heat. Now, maybe a lot of your herb purchases are really for herbs of culinary purposes. It's not so much for teas, but maybe you're buying things like cumin and coriander and cardamom, all those wonderful spices. Well, know that good chefs are going to always say that you're going to get better flavor from buying herbs in a more whole form and then grinding them up fresh. So you can use a spice grinder, you can use a mortar and pestle, you can even use your blender to grind the herbs up. I love a mortar and pestle. It's an old-fashioned way of grinding your herbs up that kind of pulverizes them, and only pulverize what you're going to need for that recipe. So then when it comes to storing our herbs, ideally we don't want to store our herbs somewhere in the light. So if they're in amber bottles and we can put them in a cupboard, that would be great. The other thing to protect our herbs from is heat. And so many people like to store their herbs right above the stove, where they're going to be exposed not only to the heat from the stove, but maybe the heat from a light that's left on. So store your herbs away from light and heat in a cupboard, preferably. And of course, it's always good to label your herbs. 6 months from now, you might not know, was this basil or oregano? What is this for? So recycle those glass jars, buy herbs in a more whole form, and support those local companies that help to make our community so unique. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Stewart. Shannon Young has been our producer. Special thanks to Christian Gadabai, Kira Damari, Claire Purnell, Alexis Kenyon, Rosano Longobetter, Eric Galatis, Matt Hoisch, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown and then a public affair. That's after these news headlines from the BBC.